was stirred to give this lesson this morning, I was looking at a list of sermons that have been preached, and I came across this title called Things That You Ought to Say to Yourselves. And I thought, yeah, that's an interesting lesson. However, I didn't remember it because I preached that many years ago. So I was curious about what I said then. And so I got to looking through my notes and through files that said it was supposed to be in this file and then wasn't there. So I looked on hard drives and floppy disk or I guess any kind of record I could have had of it. And I didn't see it. And I really wanted to look at that lesson. And so I thought, you know, I just need to do it again. And so I got thinking about what is it we need to say to ourselves. And so that's what this lesson is about. And based on a premise, obviously, and the premise is that most of us, in one way or another, talk to ourselves. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but how many of us have, on a regular basis, actually communicated to ourselves? You know, most of us either do this by the internal argument we have with ourselves. And despite what some people say, well, that's a sign of some kind of mental illness. I kind of agree that there can be times that it's necessary because you know more about yourself than anybody else. And so we think about things we say to ourselves that you got to think about what is it we really do need to say to ourselves. And so when I was looking at it, I think, well, the first thing would be on my list, I think, is really if I was to have a conversation myself, which I may at times have, I would need to tell myself the truth. And that would seem to be very fundamental but sadly, a lot of people really don't do that. A lot of people are lying, not just to others, but to themselves. And you know what I mean, that there's times that they may make promises that they realize they're really not going to keep. That they may say that they go on that diet that they've been talking about for years and years. They go on that diet and they set a date, but they really internally realize that they're not going to do that. They don't really have any plans to do that. Or maybe the idea, I'm going to go back to school and get a degree. I know of a Christian in Arkansas that I've known him now for about 20 plus years. And he has always been going to go back to school the next semester. Or the fall. If it's spring, it's next fall. If it's fall, it's going to be next winter or next spring sometime. And he has never gone back. And I tend to think that really he realizes when he makes that promise that he has no intention of keeping it. It may be the idea of I'm going to spend more time doing good things, reading my Bible, doing more visiting, things along that line that we may make the promises, but we really understand that, no, internally deep down, we don't really have plans to do that. And someone may say, well, what's the harm of doing that? And it may at first appear, well, really nothing bad. But really, if it's something that needs to be done, it really can create a lot of harm because it keeps us going on. We have pacified our conscience. We have soothed our conscience some. And so we can continue on down the same line of danger, something that really does need to be changed in our lives. If I really do need to lose some weight, if I really do need to go back to school, if I really do need to do these things, then it just allows me to say I'll do that sometime later on, knowing, of course, that I won't ever get around to it. And we find that it's talked about in the Bible. And in fact, during the days of Jeremiah, that God has sent numerous prophets to warn the people about the destruction of Jerusalem and tell them about all the sins they had committed and how he was going to punish them because of those sins. And you look at the people's response to Jeremiah in the 5th chapter, verse 31, says, the prophets prophesied falsely and the priests ruled by their own power, and my people love to have it so. But what will you do in the end? And as I read that passage, I got to think about why is it they want the false prophets? Why is it they want the priests to do these things? And I think one of the reasons is because it allowed them to keep on doing what they've been doing all along. of worshiping idols, of being immoral, perverting justice, of not caring about one another. And so they had really lied to themselves and saying, it's okay. It's okay. It doesn't really matter. And so when we think about this, that we really need to be truthful to ourselves at all times. As you look at it, we should understand that truth is valuable. And in fact, Jesus is talking about the truth, and I realize talking about the spiritual truth of accepting Him as Son of God, of accepting His Word, of going to heaven. And John 8, verse 32 says, you shall know the truth shall set you free, or make you free, depending on translation. And how many times do we talk about the value of truth? How many times does the Bible, in fact, point out to us that truth is so valuable that we should search diligently for it, and once we find it, we should never let it go. We have passage like Proverbs 23, verse 23. Buy the truth and sell it not, also wisdom, instruction, and understanding. But again, it just points out to us that truth is so important that once we attain it, we should never be willing to let it go. And the reason is because when we look at truth, we realize that it allows us to judge ourselves fairly, to see ourselves and both our strengths and our weaknesses, the good and the bad. And that can be hard to do because most of us don't like really looking at ourselves. It takes a lot of courage to do that. I don't know about you, but you know, some people like getting inside in front of the mirror. Some people like seeing themselves in pictures. I don't. Whenever I see myself in a picture, I really wonder, do I really look like that? And I look at myself in a mirror and I think, you know, who is this old guy that's facing me right now? That's not me. But we have to, and so it takes some courage to be able to strip off the facade and really look deep down inside ourselves. And that's why I had read for us a few minutes ago, Luke 15 chapter. We're not going to talk about the prodigal son per se, but when you read through that chapter, we find this young man goes and wastes all of his father's inheritance, all of his goods, and riot his living. And as you go through that passage, you find finally verse 17, it says, when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare? I have perished with hunger. I will rise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. And I don't know what lies he had told himself beforehand, but you know, he had to told himself some real whoppers. To get to the point of being in a far country, of having all this inheritance gone, of actually feeding hogs as Jew, you couldn't get any worse than that, of even talking about, or thinking about eating the slop of the hogs, And so you just think, he had to have had some really big lies, he told himself. And he had to have some lies like, those people out there, my friends that party with me, they really do like me. They'll come back and kill me. Or maybe the lies that said, they'll get better tomorrow. Everything will turn around and be a whole lot better. And I don't know what the lies would say, but finally, in order to come to that point of repenting and going back to his father's house and saying, Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I've sinned both against you and God. Then before he got that point, he had to come to a simple point of truth to himself. And that is he had indeed sinned against God. And he had wasted everything he had received in prodigal living. And until he was at that point, he was going to keep on feeding hogs. And so telling the truth, you see, it allows us to do things. It allows us to make corrections and changes in our lives that we need to make. And sometimes the Bible is called repentance. The Apostle Paul is a good example of that. And here's a man that goes out growing up a Jew, a Pharisee, a tribe of Benjamin, he talks about. And as you read about the early part of his life and describes it to the people of Galatia that he was advancing beyond his contemporaries, he is zealous for the law, zealous to serve God. He was committed to doing what God said. He's going out there and having Christians put in prison. And we know about his conversion. And the Apostle Paul in Acts 22, verse 4, as I persecuted this way to the death, binding and delivering into prison both men and women. As also the high priest bears me witness, and all the council of the elders, from whom I also received letters to the brethren, and went to Damascus to bring in chains, in those who are there to Jerusalem to be punished. See, he's talking to people that knew what he had done, and he said, here's what I used to do. He had to acknowledge, he had to be truthful with himself, and says, here's what I did. I punished those people. I tried to kill people that were confessing Jesus. Until he acknowledged that Jesus was, until he was truthful himself that he was fighting against Jesus, then he was not going to repent. But once he came to that realization, once he came to that truth, then he was able to change his life, and then he repented. And then he obeyed the gospel. And the same thing about us, that we just have to understand the truth demands that we do what's right, what God says. The truth demands we be honest with ourselves and we do what the truth says to do. And so that'd be the first thing I would have on that list, that we just got to tell myself, that, you know, Dennis, you just got to be truthful with yourself. Then the second thing that'd be on that list there is, today is what I have. That's something I think that we need to tell ourselves on a pretty regular basis, because there's a danger in our lives of living either in one or two places. One in the past, and you know what I mean. You can look at the past, what used to be, and how things used to work, and how great the past was. Or the other is to look in the future and think about the future all the time. And there is a balance that has to be had in this, because we do have to remember the past. And the past does explain some things about why we're where we're at and why things work out the way they do. And we do have to think about the future, because we do realize there's a tomorrow and a day after that. And so there's a balance involved this year. But sometimes people get really wrapped up in one or the other without looking at today. And you see, today is really, really important. And we need to remind ourselves that today is what I have. And you go back again to the Old Testament and start looking at the warnings given to Jerusalem especially during days of Isaiah and of Hezekiah and Jeremiah. And God sent prophets to Jerusalem, to Judah, telling them, I'm going to punish you because you're worshiping idols and because you have forsaken my law and done all the bad things I mentioned earlier as far as perverting justice and being immoral. And God said, I'm going to punish you. Now, what was the attitude of the people? Well, I've already read here that they had the false prophets, and they also called the priests together and had them ruled by their own authority. And you may think, well, why were they doing it? Why is it they were so easy, especially during the days of Jeremiah? I mean, Jeremiah, Judah is being carved up little by little each time that they rebelled against God, that Babylon was coming in and taking more of their country. And finally, they were actually conquered the first time. They had people carried off. And the second time, they had people carried off. And they may think the third time, why is it they would keep on responding the same way? And one of the reasons was they kept on saying, you know, God had never let Jerusalem be destroyed. But Jerusalem had been attacked before. Sennacherib, during his days, God protected Jerusalem, and God's going to protect us. And it's expressed this way here in Zephaniah. And this, by the way, whenever I turn a passage like Zephaniah, I think, okay, this is my one time of being in the book of Zephaniah all year. I can mark it off my list now. But Zephaniah, the first chapter, verse 12, says, as it kind of passed at that time, thou wilt search Jerusalem with lamps, and punish men who are settled in complacency, who sing a heart, the Lord will not do good, nor will he do evil. And you see, their attitude was, God won't do anything because, you know what, he's kind of like the parent that keeps on saying to the child, if you don't straighten up, I'm going to spank you, I'm going to punish you, and the parent never gets around to it. We've all seen situations like that, where we finally start saying to the parent, please spank that child. Well, here's the case where they kept on saying, he's not going to do it. He's not going to punish us. Because they're living in the past. And again, we just have to realize that that's a real, again, a balancing act, because Matthew 6, verse 34 says, do not worry about tomorrow, for Lord, tomorrow will worry about its own things. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. You got things to do today. I got things to do today. Rather than living in the past or living too far in the future. And as you look at that, because today's what I got, that's what you got also. And so we look at this, we find the instruction of God, and often has the word today in it, that Moses, in reading the law to the children of Israel, Deuteronomy, 11th chapter, 26 and 27, Moses said, "Behold, I set before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing, if you obey the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you today." Understand that that means I've given you this to you right now, this day, but also today is the day to do this. If you look over Deuteronomy 27 verse 9, then Moses and the priest, the Levites, spoke to all Israel, saying, "Take heed and listen, O Israel, this day you have become the people of the Lord your God." You see, it stresses this idea of today so many times, so many passages. When we talk about the people of Berea, and we noted that they were quoted as being more noble-minded, or again, translation, fair-minded than those of Thessalonica. And why? Because the last part says they search Scriptures daily to find out whether these things were so. You see, today is the day they were searching. That's what they were doing. And so it is for us. We live our lives. We understand that today is really important. If I'm not a Christian, today is really important. 2 Corinthians 6, verse 2. It says, where he says, "In acceptable time I've heard you, in the day of salvation I've helped you. Behold, now is the acceptable time. Behold, now is the day of salvation." This day is what we got. You know, on many occasions I stood up here and I say, some along the lines of, "It's so good to see you all here today. Good, and how thankful we are to have the opportunity to come together and see each other." And I realize that at times that is by rote. But at times I realize that this is the only time we have a guarantee of seeing each other is today. Because none of us knows what tomorrow will bring or what next year is going to bring. So we need to value today. But then another thing I believe that we really need to say to ourselves is I need to watch and be careful. Haven't you ever got involved in something and you realize maybe you're on a ladder and stretching out, or you're on the roof and you're stretching out as far as you can and you're holding on to something and you barely have hold on you, and you look down and realize you're 20 feet above the ground and all of a sudden it dawns on you, "You know, I could get hurt doing this." One of the guys up there in Owensboro used to have breakfast with, he had back surgery. And he came home and the doctor told him, of course, not to do anything, be very careful. He said he was one day out there, I don't know, maybe a month after back surgery, out there in the garage, and the door wasn't really working, the garage door wasn't working right, and his wife pointed out that, and he said he got a ladder, got her to get the ladder out there, and he started to get up there because he was going to reach over there and do something to the garage door, and his wife saying, "The doctor told you not to do this. The doctor said, be very careful what you're doing." And his response was, "I'm okay. Don't worry about it." And he's telling the story later on. So he survived. However, he said, while he's doing that and reaching over, all of a sudden the ladder flips out from underneath of him. It hits the window of the car, smashes the window, breaks the window. He flops down on the concrete. He says, "Wife was so mad, she didn't even turn around to look if she's okay. She walked back inside the house and closed the garage door behind her." You know, he should have thought, "I need to be careful. I can really get hurt doing this." And there's times in our lives where the same thing, that we may be kind of tempted to do things. And the Bible just talks about the fact of how dangerous the times we're looking at. And 1 Corinthians 10 verse 8, it says, "Nor less commit sexual immorality." Of course, he's using an example here of children of Israel. "I'm now signed up when they made the golden calf and they're parting it up." And he says, "As some of them did, in one day 23,000 fell. Nor less tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Nor complain, as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you except such as common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. What's he saying? To the brethren of Corinth, you need to watch your step. You need to be careful. Because these things happened to these people back then, and they can happen to you. Maybe a little different way. But you know, bad things happen because a lot of times people either are naive or they don't see the danger. I don't know how many times we know maybe a couple, and you look and you realize they don't seem like they're happy with each other. They're not really talking to each other. They're not spending time with each other. And you may even go to one and say, is everything okay? And they're saying, it's fine. You know, don't worry about it. Then find out a little while later on they're getting divorced because one has been unhappy for years. And the other person just didn't pay attention. They weren't being careful. Or maybe about a person that's married and gets involved in adultery. And you think about the warning signs they had along the way, and they decide for whatever reason to ignore the warning signs until they got involved in it. Or maybe, and there's all kinds of sins. The Christian falls away. And the warning signs along the way. They weren't careful. And so when we look at this, the simple message is to watch your step, to be careful. And it's explained to so many different passages. In 2 Corinthians 13, verse 5, he says, examine yourselves as to whether you're in the faith. Test yourselves. Do you not know yourselves that Jesus Christ is in you, and unless indeed you are disqualified? Examine yourself. Test yourself. Ask yourself some very simple questions when we had these conversations. Such as, would I have done this earlier in my life? Do I really think this is a good thing to do? Am I really trying to serve God, or am I giving in to temptation? Those kind of questions. Again, that goes back to being truthful, the very first point I made in this lesson. But he simply says that you need to really think about yourself. You need to ask yourself some questions. To see, make sure you're doing right. Ephesians 5, verse 15 says, see that then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Circumspectly means carefully. Some translations will have that word carefully and explains the reason because there's a lot of bad things going on. There's a lot of sin out there. There's a lot of temptation out there. And you need to really be watching what you're doing. You will be careful. Watch your step. And then the last thing I have on here is, yes, I can, yes, I will. Some of us may remember the yes, I can, and Bob the Builder. I don't know if Bob the Builder still is on television today or not, but that used to be, when our children were growing up, that was the thing of Bob the Builder. And I remember that we had one year our girls were on a softball team together. I mean, they're really small and had a coach, and that was her phrase, you know, yes, I can, is what she kept on stressing to the children. And that's poor because the opposite of that is, of course, no, I can't. And just think, how many times do you use the word can't? Now, there may be certain situations where it's used in a good way. Joseph, for instance, when Joseph says, how can I sin against God? And my master. Basically what he's saying is, I can't do this. I cannot do this. In that sense there, it's a good way. But a lot of times we use the word can't, and what we mean by that is that we don't think we can, and we're not going to try. And what we're doing is, we're limiting ourselves what we are willing to try to do. Now again, there may be times we have to be honest with ourselves, and I will acknowledge a long time ago that I realized at one point that I can't dunk a basketball. Okay, I understood that. However, there are times we may use the word can't because we lack confidence or because we just don't want to put forth the effort or we're afraid of failure. And so we just say, I can't. It reminds me of the one talented servant in Matthew 25th chapter. And verse 18 said, but he who had received one went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. Now, later on, we have, of course, when the master comes back and he asks this one servant what he has done, he gives it back to one talent. But you notice here that the master's response was, "You wicked and lazy servant." And I realize this one passage, that word "can't" really isn't used here, but I can just hear this guy or think this guy thinking, you know, I can't do that. I can't risk this money. I can't, what if I lose everything? I just can't do that. I can't risk failure. Again, how many times did we use the word "can't" and realize when we use that, we're limiting our abilities, what we can do? On the other hand, we need to think about the idea of things I can do. There are things I can do. And not by myself necessarily. The Apostle Paul, Philippians 4 verse 13 says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And so the point is making is that I can with Christ. And there are things that we may think we can't do, but we really can if we rely on God. If we're willing to risk failure. And some of those things aren't really big things. A good example of somebody who did something, and it wasn't a big thing, was what she could do. As an Old Testament story, it's over in 2 Kings 4th chapter. And 2 Kings 4th chapter, and verse 8 said, now it happened one day that Elisha went to Shunem, where there was a noble woman, and she persuaded him to eat some food. So it was, as often he passed by, he would turn in there to eat some food. And she said to her husband, look now, I know that this is a holy man of God who passes by us regularly. Please, let's make a small upper room on the wall. And let's put a bed for him there and a table and a chair and a lampstand. So it'll be, whenever he comes to us, he can turn in there. And happened one day, they came there, he turned into the upper room and lay down there. And just think about that passage, and that is, she sees this guy going by, and you wonder how many other people looked at this and didn't do anything at all, or said, I can't do this. And what she did was nothing big. Okay, we can make a room for him. We can put a bed, doesn't say king-size bed, just put a bed there. There's nothing here about a flat panel screen TV or any kind of entertainment. A bed, a table, and a chair. And he'd come in and he'd stay here when he's traveling. That's what he did. But you know, that's given to us for a reason. She did what she could. She did what was necessary. But she did what was needed to be done. And some things like that. And there's small things that we may look at that we may say, yeah, I could do that. And it doesn't really require that big a sacrifice to do those things. And so there's things we can do. It may be the case, I can go help the needy. Somebody that needs help, I can go and help that person. And James, the first chapter in verse 23, talking about pure and undefiled religion before God is this. It says, to visit orphans and widows in their need to keep oneself unspotted from the world. Go and help somebody who needs help. Go take care of a need. It may be something like food. It may be something like just take them and get them out for a while. It may be they need to help to go to the doctor. But there's those kind of things you can do. And if you can this time, maybe next time you can. But you can do things like that. Or you may say, I can read my Bible. How many people inside may think, I really can't do that. I can't do that. All right. Again, can't means won't a lot of times. But I can do that. Or I can pray. I can teach. I may not talk about teaching Bible classes, but I'm just talking about just teach somebody else. I can talk about praying for other people. I can do those kind of things. It may be a case I can bear the cross. Jesus talked about that. Of bearing his cross daily. And I can bear that cross. I can make some sacrifices. I can run with endurance the race that's set before me. I can keep on serving God day by day. Those are the kind of things we can do. And I will just tell you that also, I can obey the gospel of Christ. I've known a certain people who really convinced themselves they could not do that. Most of the time because they thought their sin was so great that God could not and would not ever forgive them. And the reason they think that is because they have trouble forgiving themselves. But they have to realize that they're the ones limiting themselves. There's not God. Jesus died. And the very first gospel sermon preached was to those who were responsible for his death. And if God can forgive those, who were responsible for crucifying the Son of God, that he can forgive us of any sins we commit. The Apostle Paul, in Acts 20, verse 16, says, "Now why are you waiting? Arise, be baptized, wash away your sins, call on the name of the Lord." You can obey the gospel if you have not done so. We have a song selected, and that number is again 294. If you need to respond this morning to the invitation, why don't you come as we stand and sing.